From Nevada Public Radio, I'm Dave Becker. This is State of Nevada. In summer weather, you know that car problems multiply. You've undoubtedly seen some cars stalled on the road. Maybe one of them was you. Some of us have had that experience. Whether it's the AC not working, or maybe there's a new whining sound you've never heard before, or your tires won't stay aired up, it's frustrating and it can also be costly. And at those moments, that's when we wish we knew someone who knows cars. Well, fortunately, we do know someone. Actually, some ones, and they are all here today. Car experts with decades of experience, and all four of them are ready to answer your questions. Well, joining us now is Danielson Garcia. He is the owner of Axle Motorsports. Dwayne Wick, who is currently restoring a classic Porsche. I want to hear more about that. Scott Bennett, the Program and Transportation Technology Director, CSN. He is an instructor and the director. And John Polnick is the host of Bid Nerds on YouTube. Good morning. Thank you all for joining us today.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
According to data from insurance.com, Nevada ranks as the sixth most expensive state for car ownership. That's insurance, gas, repairs, maintenance, come to more than $24,000 over 5 years. Now, thinking about that, John Polnick, you've been in the car collectible space for quite a few years. Do you see fewer people buying cars as the cost rises and as younger people turn to things like rideshare apps?
Absolutely. I say on our podcast all the time that I believe that within 10 years, car ownership, private car ownership, is pretty much cooked. It's done.
It's
falling off the cliff. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, Elon Musk said 20 years ago that in the future, owning a car will be like owning a horse. It's relegated for enthusiasts. There are people that still own horses right now, but it's people that have property. It's rich people that just do it for fun, not for transportation. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it's going for sure because of all the things you just said.
Well, now at the same time, here we have the end of the EV tax credit upon us and tariff upcharges that we're looking at down the road. Do you think it's going to have a big impact as well? Well, let's speed up that 10-year period you're talking about where you think things will phase out.
Yeah, I don't think it necessarily has anything to do with those things directly. You mentioned the EV cars. Autonomy is really what's going to change everything. And autonomous cars do not necessarily have to be EV. You can make an ICE or internal combustion engine car an autonomous vehicle. And that's really the death nail to private car ownership right now. We're already seeing the autonomous vehicles right here in Las Vegas on the Strip with Zoox. In some cities like Austin and San Francisco, if you hail a rideshare like Lyft, you're 50% likely to get an autonomous vehicle. So a car will come and pick you up that does not have a driver. What they will do is they'll take densely populated areas like, call it Manhattan or here on the Strip, and they'll say, when your car enters this particular area, it has to be autonomous. It has to drive itself. And once people see the results of that, because right now people have these calcified ideas that an autonomous car that doesn't have a human being, oh my gosh, that's going to be dangerous and scary. But once they see that traffic completely disappears overnight and there are no car accidents, you will see mass adoption very quickly in urban, dense areas, and that will just expand.
Now, as an echo of what John has been saying, Danielson Garcia, as the owner of Axle Motorsports, what about at the shop? Has business started to slow down? Have you noticed it slowing down in recent months in car repairs, or has it increased?
What I suggest to all of my customers that come in through the door is preventive maintenance, being ahead of the curve. As long as you service your vehicle, any vehicle out there, any make or model will last as long as you're ahead. And we're talking maintenance-wise, just being on top of your 75,000, 120,000 mile marker and just taking care of everything that needs to get done ahead of time.
Okay. So are people generally avoiding that regularly scheduled maintenance? Or are they pushing it back? What's going on in your experience?
We have a mix of customers. We have the ones that are ahead. We have the ones that push it back. We do not judge. We take everybody as they come in, but we try to make sure everybody is aware. I have them sign documents letting them know that, hey, I have told you about this maintenance, and it's up to them if they decide to put it away or take care of it.
Have you noticed any changes in the services needed in the last, I don't know, 2-3 years perhaps?
The concept is still the same as far as old vehicles, newer vehicles. Some of them require more electrical devices to be able to work on them. Some of them have special codes in them that require you to be able to even access the control modules and to be able to see what's going on. Some equipment that the average consumer does not have. So, yeah.
Now, I want to jump over to, something you'd expect when it's going to be 111 degrees, and that is engines overheating. Danielson and Scott Bennett, bring you in on this, too. Summers are getting hotter. What impact, we all sweat, what do cars do? What impact does summertime have on cars, especially in a desert locale like this?
Well, as long as you keep your cooling system, you know, in proper working condition, and again, maintenance, making sure you keep up on your maintenance, the cooling system will do its job. It will help keep the engine cool and keep your car running properly.
Does an engine work harder in 111 degree temperatures?
Again, as long as your cooling system is working and properly serviced, the car is designed to run in these conditions.
So what should someone do if their engine overheats? What do you want to do with that? Danielson?
So in my personal opinion is if you're seeing the needle go past the high point, just pull over. Pull over to the side, let things cool down. If you're in a safe environment, obviously, if you're not able to, then don't do so. But just always be on top of what the vehicle is telling you.
Scott Bennett.
Yeah, overheating is a condition that can occur if the cooling system, isn't working properly. But it's the damage that's caused by the overheating to the engine that's the real problem.
Are there other typical problems that the heat causes for vehicles?
In our town, air conditioning.
Air conditioning.
Air conditioning is, obviously necessary. When engines get hot, hoses, seals, and stuff on the air conditioning system can susceptible to leaks.
Is there preventative maintenance that people can do?
For air conditioning systems? Not really. A misconception people have with air conditioning systems is that the refrigerant or the Freon runs out, almost like gasoline, like they've used it up, which isn't the case. Once the refrigerant's in there, it's in there for good. So if they are losing refrigerant, it has a leak. It has leaked out, so they need to repair that leak, not just add more refrigerant.
Now, and the other thing that I was wondering about is tires. What about tires in the middle of the desert? Do they tend to wear out more quickly? Do they get eroded? Are they liable to crack?
Tires are definitely affected by the heat. Mm-hmm. We have hotter roads, the asphalt, so it does take its toll on tires, for sure. Mm-hmm.
We do live in extreme conditions here in town, and we are subject to dry rot. These tires do not last the 5-6 years that they're recommended to last, just because of the extreme environment.
Got it. So you can plan on replacing the tires a little more frequently.
I change my tires on my personal vehicle every 3 years,
be
on top of things. I do not wait. Again, preventive maintenance.
Mm-hmm. John Pullman.
Yeah, I just wanted to hop in there and say, wait a minute. You guys have air conditioning? I know my friend Dwayne on the other end of the table, he doesn't, and in my classic car, neither do I. So,
that's right. Some of us are built differently.
That's right.
And to piggyback off what Scott was saying, batteries, the heat just really takes a toll on your car battery. My suggestion is take a look after 2 years. And they're easy enough to swap out, something that everybody can do. And there you go. Save yourself from getting stranded.
And Dwayne doesn't want to carry around jumper cables. He refuses to.
Yeah, I'm totally against jumper cables because of what Danielson was saying, which is preventative maintenance. If you perform that maintenance correctly on your car, there's no need for jumper cables. And the other issue with them is, and I say this a little bit tongue-in-cheek, of course you want to be prepared, but the other issue is everybody and their uncle is asking you for them in parking lots. So if you're like, I don't have them, It's better. You're not out there in the 115 degree heat trying to help somebody their dead battery because they didn't look at it after 2 years.
So enlightened self-interest.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, that first slow crank is when you need to look at your battery.
That's exactly right. If you hear that click and it starts, you have one chance to get to AutoZone or whatever your local favorite auto parts store is and get your battery replaced at that moment. You probably won't get a second chance.
We're asking the experts, the mechanics, today on State of Nevada. We've got four auto experts taking comments and questions. Scott, got a question for you from Tahira in Banning, California. And Tahira writes, I have a 2008 Chrysler Pacifica. Radiator is out. Mechanic is telling me I need a new engine. Is it worth it or should I get a new car?
Well, obviously, engine repairs and engine replacement can be very expensive. The best way to do that is look at the value of the vehicle, the blue book value of the vehicle, compare it to the cost of the repairs, and make your decision there.
So there's a little homework involved.
Yeah,
But it's not hard to get to the Kelley Blue Book.
Yeah, you can get that information online very easily, what the car's worth, what the costs are going to be to fix it, and then just kind of do the math.
Now, one of our producers just before the show said he wants to change his brakes, but he's not sure where to begin. So, Danielson Garcia, let me ask you, how complex a repair is this to do on one's own? Or should one not do that on one's own?
It all depends on your expertise. Anybody nowadays, they can go on YouTube and they can see how to do a proper brake job, but do they have the expertise to be able to do it? Are you lubricating the calipers properly? Are you compressing the caliper in with all the proper steps? Are you taking all the fine-tuned things it takes to do an excellent brake job?
And Scott Bennett?
Yeah, one thing we tell all our students, especially in a brakes class, is we use the term like-new performance. Anytime you're doing a repair, we stress like-new performance. Yeah, that job, when you're done, should be no different than when that vehicle drove off the lot when it was brand new.
Mm-hmm. How has YouTube impacted repairs?
Interesting. It can go both ways. Because, I mean, there's a lot of good information on YouTube. There's a lot of bad information on YouTube. You know, you may be following somebody's repair that they're doing, but they're not going to post a video the next day to say how the wheels fell off or something like that. You know, they're not going to come back and post the problems that they've had. So you're better off following service information that's, you know, by the manufacturer, by, you know, aftermarket service information.
Gotcha. Dwayne Wick, I want to get to you in a couple minutes about the Porsche you're restoring. But
yeah.
you wanted
well, to. Well, I was just going to say brakes are such an important system on the vehicle that you better be sure. Brake pads, pretty much anyone can pop those in and out. It's not a big deal. However, anything beyond that, you want to be sure because you need to be able to stop, of course. So I think if you're looking on YouTube University for how to, you know, bleed your brake system and you've never done it before, just realize that you might want to get a second opinion, get someone who's done it over to help you out if you do plan to do it yourself, or just take it to the pros in a system like that.
This is not unlike visiting the doctor, is it?
That's exactly right.
Yep. Do you want to get a second opinion?
That's right. In WebMD, you know, I'm sure if you talk to an actual doctor, a lot of them say, yeah, where did you get this bogus information, right? So just be careful.
Yes.
Be careful out there.
Yeah. As I mentioned, you are spending a lot of time in the garage working on your cars, and you're currently working on a classic Porsche. How did you get comfortable working on your own cars?
That's a great question. So just diving in, I mentioned the brake thing, but if you're afraid, the first thing to do is to take a step and to go toward that fear and actually try it. But like I said, if it is a safety issue, get a second opinion. For me personally, you know, I think I'm a lot like other people that are in this industry, and we had a dad or a relative that may have, you know, inspired us to work on cars, who was mechanically gifted. And in my case, it was my dad. He was always in the garage, you know, doing things, and I kind of, you know, absorb that by osmosis, if you will. And I didn't realize it until later in life, but I had that passion to want to go out there. And I think the number one thing is no one cares as much about what you're doing or what you've done to your car as you do. So the only way to ensure that you're getting the best possible service, and if you're able, is to do it yourself.
There are recommendations for oil change intervals. And I, you know, a lot of the ones, the little sticker on my windshield always says, you know, 3,000 miles mm-hmm. and bring it back in. There are some who say once a year, some say 4,000 miles. What do you recommend in Southern Nevada?
Sooner than later, absolutely. Mm-hmm. There are many oil debates, and I think people get really passionate about oil of all things. They debate whether to use certain types of oil. You know, there's a recommended oil for your vehicle. And to me, I was always taught to do it at the recommended intervals that, you know, your vehicle, it's usually like, 15,000 miles or less, or I don't even know. But I just follow the recommendations that I have. Yeah. I do want to say real quick, though, JP had said that Elon Musk will destroy all cars in less than 10 years. I completely refute that point, and I want to say that we love our cars. You'll have to pry my cold, dead hand away from my, you know, steering wheel before you take control of it. I think that will actually make vehicles persist longer than we think.
I should also note, Tahira also isn't so sure about the death of car ownership. Mm-hmm. Just observing, among other things, not enough public transportation in Las Vegas currently to replace cars. And we shall see what happens with that observation. Joanne from Sun City also has a question about her 2018 Toyota Prius. And she asks, is the big battery as affected by the heat, the hybrid battery, as the little one? Scott Bennett?
Yeah, actually, heat is very detrimental to hybrid batteries. Even with the HVAC system, the heating and air conditioning systems up to, you know, we always known it as passenger comfort, okay? Now it's more management, okay? We're using the AC systems and the heating systems to actually heat and cool the high voltage batteries.
John Polnick, you're going to add.
I wanted to go back to the earlier question about whether or not to replace the engine on that 08 Pacifica. And the answer is absolutely not. Do not replace the engine on your piece of, you know what, 08 Pacifica. That is not a great car to begin with. The depreciation curve on that is very, very steep. It's already an almost worthless car. I don't know what the Blue Book value is, even though that's what we do on our show on YouTube, Bid Nerds, is we analyze car listings on auction sites like Bring a Trailer. So we're all about predicting the values of particular cars, and that's one that's just not worth a whole lot. And if it's lost the cooling system, and that which has caused the engine to fail, who knows how many other systems are about to fail in that car. So she could go through a huge expense of replacing that engine, which is probably more than the value of her Pacifica, and still wind up being in a situation where she's constantly paying more and more money to replace components on that car.
Robert joins us from Las Vegas. Robert, thanks very much for calling.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, I've got a 2013 JK Wrangler Jeep Sahara, six-cylinder automatic transmission. It's a used vehicle. It's got 97,000 miles on it. It has a, when I open the door, I hear a very strong tick, 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 tick noise behind the steering wheel somewhere in the dashboard. It's persistent. It's just there. It kind of comes and goes. And it's not, it's no lights are flashing on the emergency system. It's just a bit annoying. Any idea?
Scott Bennett, you're nodding your head.
Yes, I know what you got going on there. Basically, that's part of your HVAC system, your heating and air conditioning. Behind the dash, your what we call the plenum that directs all the air in the vehicle. There's actuators in there that move doors to redirect the air. And when those actuators fail and they're not really sure where they're at, what it's doing is it's moving to one direction and it keeps wanting to move in that direction because it doesn't know. So it basically needs to be replaced. And those can be easy. Those can be very difficult. You know, some actuators you can access from right underneath the dash. Takes you 10 minutes. Some the dash has to come out. Take you all day. So,
all right, Robert, thanks so much for your call. Appreciate you joining us today. Next is Garrett in Las Vegas. Garrett, welcome to State of Nevada.
Hey, Paul. Hey, a question real quick for your panel. I have a Volvo. I'm sorry, it's my dog.
Sorry.
I have a Volvo XS60 2016 Platinum Edition. You know, my the car has that start-stop service, okay, which runs on that auxiliary battery. And it basically, my question is, does it, I turn it off for the time being. Does it benefit me to just keep that on and have the car basically when it comes to, I don't know, traffic light, the stop sign, whatever, you know, when it stops the vehicle and turns the engine off? Should I just leave that off or keep it on? Because I'm afraid that it's eventually, if I keep it on, that it's going to wear out the starter motor. Am I wrong assuming that?
Going to put that question to Dwayne Wick.
I despise the auto start and stop. I disable it on my Ford F-150. It's a bane to my existence, especially in the heat of Las Vegas, as you know. It's like you get to a stoplight, your car shuts off, and then you have just the blower, and your AC is off because the engine's not running and the compressor's not turning and you're not getting cold air. What it does to the starter, I think it definitely, I mean, the starter technology has come a long way, certainly in the last, you know, 100 years or whatever, but it's still wearing. Every time it turns on and off and every time that starter has to kick in and engage the flywheel, I mean, there's wear. And there's wear on your motor starting and stopping as well. So I think it's a... I'm not against, you know, saving the environment. I think it's, you know, don't sit there idling for a long period of time is a good thing. With current emissions, I think it's probably okay. And for me, disable it full time.
All right. Garrett, thank you for your call. Go next to Steve in Las Vegas. Steve, welcome to the program. Steve, have we got you there? Okay. Well, Steve, if you want to try to call us back, that will be fine. Meantime, we will go to Bob from Las Vegas. Bob, thanks for calling. Welcome. Well, all right. We don't have Bob available right now either. Hang in there, guys, and we'll try to bring you on board as soon as we possibly can. I was going to ask you, Dwayne Wick, home preventative services. I mean, what kinds of at-home preventative services can people do to keep cars from needing to be taken to the shop all the time?
Sure. I think Danielson said it best when we started the show, and it's just taking a look around the vehicle. You know, I'll do this. This is my old man manifesting himself within me, but walking around the vehicle at a gas when you get gas, just checking the tires, taking a look around, making sure everything's...
The secret shortcut.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Our panel of car experts includes Danielson Garcia, who's the owner of Axle Motorsports, Dwayne Wick, who is currently restoring a classic Porsche, Scott Bennett, who is the Program Transportation Technology Instructor and Director at CSN, and John Polnick, who hosts Bid Nerds on YouTube. John Polnick, I wanted to turn to you and ask one thing, the current economic environment. I mean, we're living in the age of tariffs now, and car buyers have a bunch of decisions to make, and they're a little more expensive than they used to be. What are some red flags if we walk from the showroom and say, nuts to this, we'll buy a used car instead? What do you look for?
Yeah, I mean, car prices are definitely going up, and that's why I mentioned the idea that car ownership is going off a cliff here soon. The things that you car, you know, we talked about things like preventative maintenance earlier as a way to make your car last longer. And I agree with all of those ideas. The problem is modern cars, new cars, especially cars that have been made, call it post 2020. It's been around. But things like planned obsolescence, we talked about things like oil changes. When you go to the dealership and you buy a car and they're like, hey, everything's included for the first 3 years. And they say, you don't have to change your oil. You can change your oil every 10,000 miles. It's because the factory is paying for it and because they don't want to pay for that maintenance. And they don't care if the car blows up once it's out of warranty. Cars that have been made in the last 5 years, in my opinion, are all garbage. They are blowing up left and right. We are seeing quality issues all over the place, and things like that are affecting people's ability to own their car.
What do you think is impacting the quality issues?
The manufacturers have to cut costs. Everything has gotten more expensive. You mentioned tariffs. You mentioned everything from labor. Everything in the world has gone up when it comes to prices. That's a whole other conversation as to why, but the manufacturers are trying to find ways to stay profitable. And they're cutting costs when it comes to manufacturing.
Well, in hearing this, I'm also thinking it would be great if I could hire a mechanic. If I'm looking for a used car, hire a mechanic to take a look at a used car that I'm thinking of buying. Mm-hmm. Is that something that is possible to do?
Yeah, we call that a PPI, a pre-purchase inspection. So when you're looking at an old car or a pre-owned car, you absolutely want to have it looked at by an independent pre-purchase inspector, someone other than the dealership or someone other than the person selling the car, because the dealership, when dealerships take cars on trades, this idea that they go through it with their mechanics and inspect everything and fix everything before they sell it to you, that's just rubbish. They have someone make sure that nothing is leaking, obviously, but for the most part, they're just handing you the old car and letting it go. Dwayne, I know he's got some pings on this.
Well, usually it's your Uncle Larry who comes over and kicks the tires on your behalf.
Yeah.
And he's basically, yeah, I guess this looks pretty good. I guess get this one, you know, something like that. But I think you're right, JP, is to find somebody who's reputable, who understands that vehicle specifically. In my world, it's Porsches. Mm-hmm. And you want to find somebody that knows the car, that generation of car, who can be there physically on your behalf and get down on the ground, look underneath, and check everything
out.
They
need to know the specific problems with specific models and manufacturers, mm-hmm. because there are some vehicles that have problems that are inherent in those particular vehicles, and no amount of preventative maintenance is going to avoid those pitfalls.
Scott Bennett?
Yeah, on what you're saying about the inspecting the used cars. I did inspections on used cars at the dealership for many years. And really, we're looking, obviously, for safety, you know, brakes, tires. Obviously, you don't want something that leaks. But at the dealership level, at least in my experience, if the car had a lot of problems that needed to be fixed, we didn't even keep it. We would wholesale that car and move on to the next one. So the cars at the dealership, I think, are in pretty good shape as a used car, in my experience.
And I appreciate that, but that's assuming that the mechanic who is doing the inspections for the dealership knows specific models. You know, Dwayne is a Porsche expert. I am sort of too. There are specific models of Porsches that have something. As an example, there's something called an intermediate shaft bearing on certain older 911s. And if a mechanic is not familiar with that problem, there is no way to detect if that particular problem is imminent or not.
And it could be a very expensive problem.
It is catastrophic. The entire value of that car is done if that particular component fails. So it is very, very important that the inspector of your potential purchase is not only a car expert, but is a specific expert to that particular make and model. That is very, very important.
Bob Bob in Las Vegas, you've hung tough with us for the last few minutes. Thanks very much, but we've got you now. Welcome. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. My mechanic recently told me something that, if this is true, needs to be shared. I have been guilty of sitting in my car in the middle of the summer with the engine running and the air conditioning on, and they told me that is stupid, that you are cooking all the electronics in your engine compartment because the fans are not capable of really keeping that compartment cool if there's not air flowing through it. Is this true and something that needs to be passed along?
Mm. Dwayne, Will?
I would say it is true. However, life is short. I just blast the AC because you don't know if tomorrow will come, and I want to be comfortable. And a vehicle is a utility for most of us. I mean, some of us have like a hot rod project or something like that that's a little bit different. It's like a racehorse, like JP said. You know, you have your art project or your specialty car, and then you have your utility, like your washer, dryer, your Tesla, that you just want to be comfortable in. So should you really worry about it? Probably not. I think life is short.
Steve in Las Vegas, thanks for being so patient, and welcome. You're on State of Nevada.
Yeah, hey, I have a 2018 Frontier. and I've had the battery replaced. Recently been to Sam's and had do that headlight wipe. And by the time I get downtown from driving out here by Tropical Parkway, 15 miles into town, my headlights are getting dim. And I'm just wondering, is that bulb, is there a halogen bulb that can be replaced without replacing the whole lens? Or what would be causing headlights to seem like they're going dim? Hmm.
Danielson,
but the voltage regulator and everything, voltage is still good.
It's still
and
good.
I just had a new battery put in.
Gotcha. Danielson Garcia.
Hello, Steve. That's a great question. So there's a lot of components that your vehicle has. You have your battery, which is your just your starting mechanism. You have your alternator. You have your relays. You have a bunch of components that could all go into effect to see what's actually going on. So unless you take it to a repair shop to get that inspected, there's no exact indicator as to what it could be.
Hmm. All right. Well, Steve, thank you for calling. Good luck. Hope you get that solved. Dwayne Wick.
Well, we call that throwing money after a problem that you don't really know. Like, yeah, you could replace the bulbs. You could replace, you know, different components. But then until you really know, you're just throwing money at a problem without really getting a good diagnostic.
Hmm. 70. Oh, I'm sorry. John Polder.
Yeah, I just wanted to hop in there, too. I mean, these types of problems exasperate the reason why people are not wanting to own cars. If they have look, I'm a Gen Xer. Millennials are the last generation that grew up and can remember a time before the internet. But everyone younger than that, freedom does not come with an automobile. Freedom comes with their mobile device. They can just hail a ride and have mobility instantly. Younger people do not want to deal with throwing hundreds or thousands of dollars at a stupid problem on a car that no one can figure out. These types of things are incredibly annoying for people that understand cars, much less someone that doesn't. So for someone who is younger, the average age of a first-time driver's license holder is 22 years old. Hmm. When I was 16, I couldn't wait to get a driver's license, right? And that number is just going to continue to get higher and higher and higher because a Gen Alpha does not need to learn how to drive a car. They just don't. And why would they want to incur that expense as well?
Who will be the Uber drivers in 2075, though?
Robot.
Someone needs. Oh, dang it!
The same one that in Austin. Like, well, yeah. Go ahead.
Diana is calling us from Yucca, California. Diana, welcome.
Thank you very much for taking my call. Sure. My friend George works on my car, and he's going to entertain this.
Hi, I'm a retired aircraft mechanic, so I've got a pretty good background and skills, but I need technical information to maintain her 97 Porsche Boxster that I helped her find. We got a good deal on a used low mileage, but it's old enough, it's 28 years old, it's got starting to get the old age issues. And I've seen so many manuals that don't give me wiring schematics and don't give me the information that I need. And I live out in the desert. I've already, like I said, I'm retired. I've already divested of so many things that I'm not even on, I don't even have a computer anymore. So if I get an electronic manual that I see offered, it's on my smartphone, and I lose stuff on my smartphone that I don't even know where it went. How can I get a good copy of a manual, get a hard print, hard copy?
All right, we'll throw that first to John Polnick, and then we'll get some additional insights.
Yeah, that's a great car, by the way. The 97 Boxster is one of the early water-cooled Porsches. By the way, check the intermediate shaft bearing on that car. The intermediate shaft bearing is in between the clutch and the engine, and they are prone to failure on that particular drivetrain. They are not crazy expensive to replace, but it does require the transmission to be removed. It's very similar. It's something that's usually done. It's part of a maintenance package when you replace the clutch on that car. So if you don't have a record of that intermediate shaft bearing having been replaced, do it, because that could ruin the entire car. As far as finding a manual for that car, there are plenty of places online. Renlist and Pelican Parts are two online forums. If you don't have access to those, then you're looking at reaching out to folks like our good friends at Godin Porsche of Las Vegas. Their classic program is excellent, and they have hard copies of all kinds of manuals for all the old cars.
Absolutely. I would say the exact same thing, and I would also say community. there's probably somebody right there in Yucca, was it?
Mm-hmm.
That is a Boxster expert. You'd be surprised. And you find that through either the PCA, the Porsche Club of America, or online forums, just finding out who's who in your local community, and they could help.
Talking with the car experts today on State of Nevada, and joining us right now is Lee from Las Vegas. Lee, thanks for calling and welcome.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
I have a 1965 Ford Thunderbird. It is stock. It runs well, except it overheats at highway speed. Not at low speed. I've had it in the El Dorado parade without any issues. But I get on the highway, and that temperature just climbs. And the entire cooling system's been replaced. Hmm. So you got any ideas?
I'll bet you we do. Danielson Garcia, what do you make?
That's a great question. So there's a lot of components in your vehicle. It all depends if you're using quality parts. A lot of just because it's a new part does not mean it's a good working part. If you go with your manufacturer provided equipment, usually that is the answer to your problem.
Scott Bennett?
It could be the flow through your thermostat, because if you're at high speeds, if your coolant is moving too quickly through the engine, it's not giving it enough time to collect the heat from the engine. So you might want to check the thermostat.
What's the intake on that Thunderbird? Is it the stock original intake, like carburetor?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. Yes. Maybe the timing. Sometimes at cruise speed, if your timing is off a little bit, could make the engine run hotter.
Yeah, if it's too lean.
David joins us from Las Vegas. Thank you, by the way, Lee, for the call. David joins us from Las Vegas. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you. The question is the public allowed to attend the auto auctions? And if so, when and where are they held?
Car auctions.
So there are all kinds of car auctions. On BidNerds, we specifically focus on online car auctions. Online car auctions are kind of the latest thing. People, when they think of online auctions, they think of things like eBay. But Bring a Trailer is a website that's been around for well over 10 years, and they've been conducting auctions. They specifically focus on enthusiast cars mostly. And the great thing about Bring a Trailer is that it's kind of a social media platform as well as an auction platform. So there are literally hundreds of cars for sale every single day on Bring a Trailer 7 days a week. You can go on that website, and there's a community. Each particular listing shows all the details of the car, hundreds of pictures, and then below the listing are comments from the users on the social platform. So people, Dwayne mentioned community. When a particular car is listed for sale, everyone that knows anything about that car goes on and has a conversation about it. So you can really learn a lot about specific makes and models. And unlike eBay, at the end of an auction on eBay, everyone knows the idea of, okay, you wait to the last second and you put your best price in there and you hope you kind of snipe that auction. Whereas on Bring a Trailer, P-Car Market, Cars and Bids, these online auction platforms, in the last 2 minutes, if someone bids, they just add another 2 minutes. So the auction goes on and on and on. There are other types of auctions that everyone knows, like things like Barrett Jackson or Mecum. Those types of auctions, or the auctions that are happening in Car Week in Monterey this week, Sotheby's, those are all auctions where the public are generally allowed to go to those, but you have to be vetted in order to bid on them. And then when it comes to local auctions, there are dealer auctions that are only dealers are allowed to go to. Those are auctions that the dealerships are usually selling cars that they've had as inventory too long or whatever, have problems. And then there's also a couple of auctions in town. They're like towing lot auctions where people's cars get towed or whatever, and they wind up at an auction platform, and those are open to the public, although those cars are only for people who really know what they're doing, because most of them are junk or broken or have problems, so you really have to be a mechanical expert to beware if you're buying one of those.
This is not just a one location.
Yeah, car auctions really took off in 2020-21 when everyone was locked down. So the online auctions became very, very popular. People discovered them. And now, a site like Bring a Trailer that sells 100 cars a day, they get you know, a half million individual people visiting that site on any given day, too. So they are huge entertainment platforms as well. Hmm.
David, thanks very much for your call. We got a couple of emails to pass along. Bill in Las Vegas offers an interesting tip. He says if your engine's overheating, you can turn the AC off, turn the heater on. It's counterintuitive, but he says it sucks hot air out of the engine and helps you keep driving. Scott Bennett, what's your take?
Don't really agree with that. The heater is really just redirecting coolant through the heater core to provide heat for the cabin. It's not really, I mean, the heat that's in the engine is still going to be in the engine. That's what's, you know, we're utilizing for the heater core.
Gotcha.
It's me again. Yeah, comfort. I mean, and also your body is worth millions. Just go to your hospital for anything. Stitches cost $50,000. So do not risk overheating your body for a $20,000 vehicle or whatever it is, $50,000.
That seems pretty practical, yes. Maria from Las Vegas also messaged us. She says, I'm shopping for a car for my family. She wants a safe option. She's heard that Volvo tends to be a pretty safe brand but can also have a lot of mechanical problems, and she's wondering if that reputation is deserved.
We're talking specifically Volvo?
She's talking specifically Volvo.
I mean, you know, look, most modern car, if you have no mechanical ability, buy the newest car with the best warranty that has the features that you want as well. Warranties are very, very important these days. And when you look at the long-term ownership, that's really the big question. Are you going to keep the car once the warranty is up? So a lot of people look at things like leases. You know, my good friend Dwayne over here besmirched my personal. He said that that I'm advocating for the death of cars. That is not the case at all. I am a huge proponent of individual private car ownership, but I am also a big advocate of things like EVs, things like Teslas. If you are a normal person who drives around to and from work and maybe has some personal errands to run, then getting something like a Tesla, you never have to go to the gas station. You bring it home, you plug it into the wall, and I personally love the idea of my wife not having to ever stop at a gas station again. And there's almost no maintenance, and half the maintenance is done online. So
and there have been credits that you can get financial assistance from the government in the past, so it could be a good deal.
Yeah, and they are last. Now, other brands' EVs, not so much. But just do your online research, and it really comes down to specific models, too, not necessarily a make, because there are some models of specific makes that are great, and some models, not so much.
Having said that, Volvo has a stellar safety reputation.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you. Dale in Las Vegas joins us. Dale, thank you for calling. Welcome.
Yes. How you doing, guys?
Doing pretty well, thank you.
Yes, I have a 2008 Ford Fusion, and it drives fine, but when I'm at a stoplight, if I keep it in drive, it'll shut off. But if I shift it to neutral, it'll stay running.
So, Ford Fusion, you're a stoplight, car shuts off if you've got it in drive, but if you shift to neutral, not a problem.
Do the lights go off, or does it just stall? Does the engine stall?
It just stalls.
That sounds like a transmission problem.
And it'll fire right back up.
Yeah, I'm not an expert on transmissions, specifically automatic transmissions, but I suspect you have something wrong with the transmission. You need to get that looked at. That car is not worth a whole heck of a lot, so if they tell you to replace the transmission, don't bother, walk away, get something else.
Okay, yeah, because I didn't pay much for it.
Yeah, and that's what's great about cars like that.
I've had it a while.
Yeah, you've gotten the miles out of it. That's what's great about older cars like that. They don't cost a whole lot. And, you know, those generations of cars were kind of made to not last forever. They are made to be disposable. So dispose of it and get something else and just, you know, do your research. And whatever you wind up buying, have it inspected by someone who knows what they're looking at.
Remember safety, too, if you're stalling.
I only drive it back and forth to work. And I only live about 5 minutes from work. So that's all I mostly use it for.
Yeah, that problem is going to get worse, and it's going to strand you in a dangerous place, like Dwayne says. You don't want to be you don't want to be a danger to yourself and other people on the road when that thing fails.
Dale, thank you for the call. We are delighted to hear from you. Joining us now, Chris from Las Vegas. Chris, thanks for calling and welcome to State of Nevada.
Hey, what's going on, guys? I have a 2015 Yukon, GMC Yukon, and recently my engine light came on solid. And then after that, I started hearing some rattling in the front. When I went and looked under it, it looked like it was the catalytic converter that was rattling in there. Just about 2 days ago, it stopped rattling. And, you know, I'm wondering where should I move forward from here as far as getting it done or getting it fixed? Or...
Scott Bennett?
Yeah, your check engine light, anytime you check engine light on, it is going to be related to emissions, and obviously your catalytic converter is related to emissions. Now, the catalytic converter is more under the center of the vehicle, not so much in the front of the vehicle. But if you can pinpoint that the rattling is coming from the catalytic converter, then yeah, it's internally starting to come apart, and you really need to get the vehicle scanned and see what that code is, because anytime you have a check engine light, there's going to be a code associated with that.
All right.
Okay.
Chris, good luck. Thanks for calling. Tahir has rung us up again from Banning, California. Tahir, I thank you for calling, and you're back on State of Nevada.
Hi, guys. Thank you for taking my call. Appreciate it. Yeah, since you guys all feel that my Civic is not worth fixing up, I can't really afford to buy a brand new car off the lot. We just bought a house. So where would you recommend with the car options where we can get like a reasonable, decent car as a layman who doesn't know a lot about cars?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good question. Affordable is a very subjective question. So it comes down to whether or not you can afford financing, your credit, how much you have on for a down payment, whether or not you can afford a lease or a purchase, or if you'd prefer to just, you know, buy a car outright. I don't want to ask you any personal questions over the air, but, you know, if your credit is good, then I recommend, again, I keep going back to the Tesla. I hate doing that because I'm not a big fan of EV cars.
You know, they have some great deals right now.
But here's the thing. There are manufacturers right now that are look, a lot of manufacturers have way too much inventory. There are manufacturers that have 500 days inventory, and deals can be made out there. But yeah, go ahead, Dwayne.
I was just going to say, if your budget is more in the used car territory, mm-hmm. and it's kind of local, I would find a friend that is knowledgeable and can go out with you, pick five of these vehicles that you think would be, do some research that you think would work for you, and then go and test drive, have your friend look at them, and then go from there.
I'll go one step further and just say, hey, find me on Instagram. So our YouTube channel is Bid Nerds. That's like bidding in an auction, Bid Nerds. Our handle on Instagram is @BidNerds. DM me there, and I can talk to you about your specific requirements and kind of where you're at, and we can talk about those personal things that we don't want to talk about online or over the air, and I can steer you in maybe a better direction. I'm happy to do that for you, and I'm not trying to sell you a car because I don't sell a car.
We have thanks to our car experts today, John Polnick, host of Bid Nerds on YouTube, Scott Bennett, Program Transportation Technology Instructor and Director at CSN, Dwayne Wick, who's currently restoring a classic Porsche but knows a few other tricks too, and Danielson Garcia, the owner of Axel Motorsports. Gents, it's been fun. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
This is State of Nevada.
State of Nevada is brought to you by the Journalists of Nevada Public Radio. It's produced and edited by Mike Prevett and me. Our board operator is Mason Udani. Ann Davis and Heidi Kaiser contribute stories. We're your local National Public Radio member station, whose main source of funding comes from listeners like you. If you'd like to find out more, visit knpr.org. I'm Paul Boger. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.